Welcome. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. Tonight, I thought it would be an interesting show to talk about some of the things that I personally, in my deeper past, have been confused about in terms of metaphysics and spirituality and science and just generally trying to understand how the universe works, cosmology, ontology. And I thought I'd bring it to your attention because I think others have some similar questions. And so I called tonight's show Nobility and the Paradox of Karma. Now, if that isn't a mouthful, but I will explain it, of course, as I usually do. And I also thought that it would be interesting that, you know, this being a show that deals with all these different issues, that we get into some of the real, we'll say, complex issues that people don't know are complex issues, but they know that they've had problems with it. They didn't know, just don't know what the name of it was or why it was happening to them the way it was happening. So let's start off with some of the paradoxes of karma. As most of you are aware, and I'll restate this, our universe is an open universe in which the Creator or God chose for there to be freedom and for there to be choice for all of its creations, which are life, and those creations help to create more of it or God. And in order for that to happen, the creations themselves have to have freedom and cannot be determined, predetermined, by the thought or actions of our Creator. Now, this is an important concept because a lot of people disagree with this, or think they do anyway, because they believe in certain predetermined issues or determinism in general. They may buy into certain parts of some forms of astrology, which tends to agree or support the idea that certain things are predetermined. But that's a misunderstanding, which I'm going to relieve you of within the next few minutes. And that's where the idea of the paradox of karma comes from. So this is an area now that I think is the basis for many people's confusion, because they don't want the universe to be predetermined. Most people do not want that. Yet they believe it because they've heard it so many different ways presented to them as being something of the reason why X, Y, or Z takes place, or why astrology is, quote-unquote, a science of predetermined issues. It's not, by the way. And then a lot of people say, well, what about those folks who can run around and tell us about the future? How can anybody know the future if it isn't predetermined to take place? We'll talk about that tonight as well. But at any rate, the interesting thing about this is that this is a subject that really has a fundamental argument on both sides. In other words, freedom of choice, we'll call it freedom of thought versus predeterminism and things that are going to happen as a matter of fate, no matter what someone chooses to do or not. And for some folks, they actually prefer, I think some do, the other side, which is that, oh, predeterminism is wonderful because then there's little or no responsibility on the part of anybody because everything's predetermined to take place. That is, believe me, not my understanding of the universe. And I can convince others in argument why that couldn't be true. But this is not tonight a show of convincing anybody of anything. It's really a talk about what it is that my understanding is of how the universe works, and what supports that, and what doesn't support it, etc. So, paradox of karma. What does that mean? Boy, that in itself sounds like something. Whoa, the paradox of karma. Well, what is karma? Karma is a split in between the cause of something and its overall eventual effect. That something can be anything. It always involves some sort of energy, so it's an action, as we call it, the third part of God's existence or mind. And it has some kind of outcome. So if you have a cause, there's going to be some kind of outcome. This is where the paradox of karma, though, comes in. Some people say, well, if everything that has a cause is eventually going to have an effect, isn't that predeterminism? Now, think about that. Everything that has a cause eventually is going to have an effect. That's a fact. It's not a conjecture. Then isn't that predetermined? And the answer is, I should, well, like Karnak, open the envelope right now. All right. No, the answer is the following. The answer is people get confused between an effect, an effect, and a specific effect. Karma does not mean that things are predetermined. It just means that there's a spreading out of a cause, and the effect, because things are not determined, can be many, 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 many infinite virtually possibilities, of which, because of a thing called time, they will not necessarily happen together. And you might say, well, what's time? What is time? Time is the measure of how much virtue or light is being created between the cause and the effect. The more the light is being created between the cause and the effect, the more closer they come together. So you accelerate karma by being virtuous. Some people are not going to like that idea much. But it's not a bad thing, because when you're accelerating karma by being virtuous, you're changing the effect from a very hostile negative one to a less hostile and negative one. It's just going to hit faster. So that doesn't sound too bad, right? I mean, so the effect is completely undetermined. Completely. It can change from, by becoming virtually totally enlightened, the effect can happen almost immediately, but then the results of that effect are going to have no negative consequences, or virtually none. And if the opposite were true, and someone goes real dark in their cause, in other words, they come up with some kind of concept that they're going to implement, and they choose to, that produces one or a zillion, doesn't matter, effects that are very negative, will become very negative, because their choices are all towards darkness. And by doing that, the effects are going to take much, much longer to manifest. But when they do, they're all going to be quite negative. All right. That has an interesting ring to it. If you've read Afterlife Love, you remember that one of the characters in that book had a real hard time with that idea. But it really makes a lot of sense. You just have to understand how time works, and karma, and space, and cause and effect, and all kinds of stuff. And you can get confused. You can get real confused. That particular character in the book became extremely confused about it, and hostile, angry. Okay, so paradox of karma is that karma, as it becomes more positive, moves more quickly and is not necessarily a negative thing, but that everybody's going to love the effect. That's okay. The effect changes based upon the use of the creation of either darkness or light by the life that is being involved with and connected to the karma. So it's interesting that we have the ability to change the effects of any cause that we have made in this lifetime or in prior lifetimes. And those effects could be our own individuals, or they could be some group things that we've done with a number of people. They could be worldwide things that we've participated in just because we're a member of this planet. But however, in whatever ways, we have chosen to interact. Those interactions have a certain level of light in the beginning, And if left alone and not changed, they will have a predetermined outcome. But it's almost unheard of in most ways of thinking, in most ways of interacting with the universe, that we as being actors on the, in the universe choose to do nothing for lifetimes or longer. Is it possible? Is it possible that somebody creates a cause, does something, creates something, that they, over a great length of time, lifetimes of time, do not do anything to alter the effects from what we originally did? Well, it's possible. It's more likely we're going to reinstitute the same kinds of causes from one lifetime to the next. That has a definite effect on producing what many people would think is predetermination. Let me give you an example. Let's say five lifetimes ago, I killed five people and robbed four banks. Okay. And in each lifetime since then, I've killed one or two less people and robbed one or two more banks. All right. Then we're into this lifetime now, five lifetimes away. And in this lifetime, I do pretty much the same thing, but the karma is finally coming home, so to speak. And the results are that I am eventually apprehended, spend time in prison for bank robbery, and then eventually am killed while maybe I'm in prison. But the interesting point about all this, the interesting point about all this, is that I would have to have had no, virtually no growth, no change. Very little has been active or interactive in my existence. Could that be true? Yes, rare as it may seem. And that's one of the parts of the paradox, is that in rare circumstances, you could have that happen. But in most circumstances, it doesn't. Yeah, it doesn't. And give you an example. Instead of killing five people in this lifetime, I might save the lives of 30 people. Most of them related in some way, or the reincarnations in some ways, depends, to people that I killed in the past. And maybe and then in this same lifetime, I make sure and help apprehend bank robbers. And I'm just giving examples that are pretty simplistic. It's usually much more complex than this. But let's say all of that coming together undoes a good deal of the karma. Now, the karma is going to move faster. Therefore, whatever negative consequences do come back to me, if there are any left, those negative consequences come back relatively quickly in this lifetime. But at the same time, I don't end up necessarily getting my head chopped off or killed in some other way. And I don't end up either having a situation in which I'm in prison for a long period of time. So that's a better outcome from my standpoint. Certainly if I'm the bank robber from old and the killer from many lifetimes ago, that certainly seems to be a reasonable outcome and one that I had a direct effect on changing, if you can see that. And it also means that there is no predetermination, because the outcome is based upon my continual involvement and interaction with everything and everyone around me. You see. Now, could I overcome my karma if I'm Adolf Hitler and I, you know, along with my henchmen, I killed tens of millions of people, you know, and tortured many more than that? You know, I mean, can I get out of it? Well, I might spend a friendly trip for 20 or 30 years after I'm supposedly have killed myself and live in Brazil or someplace like that. Because some people believe that's where Hitler actually ended up. But the point is that even if that were to be true, the inevitability is that if I don't change a significant amount of my next lifetimes by a pretty amazing level of creating virtue, then I'm going to be facing some terrible consequences. However, remember, those consequences come on slowly, because the darker my interaction with my world, my universe, the slower the karma moves for me. Sounds pretty strange. Everybody likes it the other way. Well, we should get those folks. Let's get them faster. Actually, God has great grace. The whole universe is set up to give us so many extra, we'll say, sweetens, because we just came here and failed. I mean, this is coming to the physical world and failing is, no matter how bad the failure is, there's still some, you got to give someone credit for at least trying. And this is a real tough place and a real tough planet, by the way. And another paradox of karma, let's talk about this, is that some of the worst kinds of karma are created by the worst circumstances under which people can exist or live. And this doesn't excuse them from doing terrible things, but the karma moves distinctly more slowly in those circumstances, and that gives those folks, like us here on Earth, where Earth is a real nasty planet to live in, a lot more time with a lot less immediate struggle and consequences for relatively bad actions and doing terrible things. So this is a very forgiving system if you think about it, and it isn't deterministic as much as it is just. Okay, you could say, well, what's the justice about someone who does all these terrible things, and because they do or continue to do more terrible things, their karma becomes more and more delayed? It seems that justice should be swift. Job it off. You know? You've heard that saying, swift justice. But in reality, the universe is not set up to be a punitive mechanism, nor is God. The best way to understand it is that karma is not meant to punish. Karma is meant to unify and prevent there from being what most people would call forces from developing, or at least reduce the forces. Karma is a force reducer, whereas any time energy goes against energy in any part of our universe, that induces many more forces rather than reduces them. Evil is a force producer. And God does not seek that there be forces. So ultimately, force is not a great thing. And when we live in a forced environment, we lose freedom. We become less of a co-creator with our creator. And our life becomes relatively meaningless. You know, those are pretty bad outcomes. Just because we are on the wrong side, you could say, of karma. Again, these are choices. We can make these choices if we want to. But for most of us, you know, understanding the paradox of karma, we can actually design our life in ways in which we are not victims, for the most part, no matter how bad the causes were in this life or prior lives to many different interactions with others. So you're not, your life isn't over because you've done something bad or terrible. The main concept here is that if you choose to correct those things earlier and sooner, better than later, your karma will be accelerated, but it won't be as nasty. And as long as you can bite the bullet as early as possible, the results could be fairly, I'll say, de minimis. Not too bad, even for having done some terrible things in your past. You see, this is really a system of grace. It's not a system of punishment. Now, what about the religions and the biblical materials and everything else that says God is a vengeful Lord, a vengeful God? Where did that come from? What's the value of it? What truth is there? Well, what's missing in that particular viewpoint is that the second part of God is love. And the first part of God is freedom. So where in the heck is the vengeance part? Is that in the third part of God's mind? You know, the interaction part? What's going on? Nope. It's a projection from human beings about their own frustrations about misunderstanding God that makes God into this crazy vengeful being. Because they can't understand God. Because they can't think clearly enough to really see what God is. The results are that they create a God that has built into it their own frustrations, their own, we'll call it, weakness. And it makes God seem shallow, hollow, meaningless as a God. So it's an interesting point that people that are caught into this dilemma tend to make the most negative thought processes up in their minds about what God really is. Okay, so what about nobility? Let's talk about nobility for a few minutes. I kind of skipped over it because the paradox of karma in itself is so hard. I want to cover that first before I burn out your minds with all that stuff, and then we'll go on to nobility. Okay, nobility. Nobility is a human virtue that is the highest virtue a human being can practice, but it is not the highest virtue by any stretch in the universe. It's just a humans doing human things, not humans doing superhuman things, but humans doing human things can do nothing more than be noble. What the heck is noble? Noble is doing the very best that you can with who and what you have at any particular time. Very best. And a lot of people are going to say, well, how could there be something beyond nobility? If it's the best you can do, how can you do any better? Well, nobility takes into account only the individual and their interactions and their interactions with others and their actions coming from choices within themselves. And you might say, well, what's wrong with that? Well, not too much, except that once you gain higher levels of group consciousness and you're able to work in spiritual hierarchical thought and you work within service, group service and world service, and you're trying to work for the sake of serving others and helping them to be better servers, then you lose the perspective of there being a need for almost an obsession with being, we'll say, self-directed and individual beyond a reasonable doubt and all other possibilities. This creates in itself a dilemma for a person who chooses to do that. That's one of the problems. And when someone is into that, then it becomes, for them, a seeming impossibility to be anything greater than noble. But for those that are functioning with the consciousness, the shared consciousness of hundreds, thousands, and more others that have similar consciousness with them, these ultra beings, these beings that are beyond human for the most part, practice a different kind, both of consciousness and of creation of virtue. They work as a team. While they're still contributing as individuals, they work together as a team. And so nobility to them becomes nonsense, because nobility only challenges the person about what they can do, whereas these folks see that as nothing more than an illusion. They can do vast amounts more if they only work together, and they choose to do that. And when they do, the results are pretty phenomenal. Yeah. So much so, more so, than nobility. Nobility then turns out to be some distant virtue that has little strength or ability for a future world with great beings that don't make the kinds of terrible mistakes that humans do. So ultimately, nobility, yes, is a great human virtue, but it's a minor virtue compared to the virtue of creating love on a higher level, or the virtue of creating beauty or truth even. When we get to these higher levels of functioning than just cooperative sharing and doing the very best we can on an individual level, we realize that we're responsible for doing the best we can with all others who are at or above our level of functioning, and to co-participate with them and with God, which is at a level beyond all things, to create more light. We may just be a small cog in this giant great wheel of virtue. But that's all right. Nobility keeps it very, very specific and central to the individual. There's nothing wrong with being an individual in creation. Yet, in execution, it almost always requires that you go way beyond nobility and you create with as many others as are possible for them to create with you. That has a total different context. And the results are phenomenal in comparison to the results of individualness and nobility alone. Now, I'm not condemning or saying terrible things about people who are noble. I think it's wonderful that they are. Yet, it's still a relatively limited virtue. Wow. And that's a lot to wrap your head around, what I just said. It gets kind of confusing, too. Now, how does that fit in with the paradox of karma? I mean, here we've got a situation where nobility is someone trying to do the very best, and then the paradox of karma suggests to some people that we live in a deterministic universe in which doing your best won't make a darn bit of difference because everything's predetermined anyway. Well, once you have that going at you, you're going to start having a lot of questions about God. And the reason is because, by nature, most people, if they want to or do believe in God, they have a gut-level feeling, even if it's not fully explicable to them or to others, that God can't be pulling strings and making everything work, and there must be freedom. Freedom to act, freedom to think. There has to be. Even if we sometimes act as though we don't have it. Because if there isn't freedom, if we really don't have freedom, then the whole thing is some kind of great charade. And one would question, with great trepidation, why we even exist. Because existence itself would have such a hollow and narrow side to it. For a lot of people, it really wouldn't make much sense. All right, so when we have these two pitted against each other, we have grand illusions in our mind. Because all of the pairs of opposites, which are paradoxes in themselves, that we can use to try to figure out the value of truth about anything, because these pair of opposites only exist in the mental world, all of them have built into them this question of paradox of karma and nobility versus the paradox of karma. They are continually bombarded by it. Some of them have bought into the belief that the best way to resolve this is to not do that. Just let it go. It doesn't really matter anyway. Who cares if God is concerned about us being noble and there being some kind of paradox about karma? God just doesn't concern itself with those things. And I tell you that God is greatly concerned about those kinds of things, because it removes from us an important element of who and what God is. if we get caught up in. If you start really questioning why a God would create a universe in which there's so much, we'll say, horrible things taking place, so many of them. Well, the answer to that is that too many people have not raised the question themselves and sought to fight and to, not in a physical way necessarily, but fight in any way that would prevent this problem from manifesting itself as often and so much as it does. I mean, sometimes it just manifests itself as a simple question by a child trying to figure out its world. But more often, it's within each of us that we are facing these kinds of problems and questions. All right, so paradox of karma gets to the point of us finding that there's no way, there just plain is no way, that we can accept that there is a predetermined universe and live in any way that we'd be convinced to be noble or go beyond nobility in terms of creating life. That's our problem. And it's a central problem that has been used by dictators who want to destroy religions. It's been used by some tainted and very, let's say, quarrelsome elements of society, people who are anarchists, people who are seeking to be destructive to life, which means evil, and all other more specific forms of evil have been into this kind of, we'll call it, negative and unthinking, unthoughtful ways of existing and just buying into the idea that, well, sure, everything's predetermined. So there's no sense in trying to do anything. It's futile to try to change because whatever's going to happen was already predetermined to happen. And we're just going through the puppet show. Well, what I've said for years, by the way, my reaction to all this, because I said this was some of the things I'm talking about tonight are questions I had 34 years ago. And what I said is the following to myself. You know, if the universe were as capricious in some respects as a predetermined universe has to be, I know it sounds very contradictory. How is a predetermined universe so capricious? Well, it's capricious because someone or something already determined everything, and they did so without really getting our opinion on the subject and didn't give us a chance to change anything. That's a pretty negative place to be in. And the way out of it is to say, as I did, if that's the way the universe is, I choose not to be in that universe. That isn't a universe I will support. That isn't one that I will choose to live in. It isn't one that I will play by some kind of fantasized rules about. A complete rejection of what that particular model is proposing. That's what we come up with if we're going to tackle this particular obstinate problem. Now, I know this sounds like a little over the top, but it's so critical because there's so many parts of the world right now. Everything from people who believe in multivariate universes that are parallel and at the same time have infinite possible outcomes with complete chaos at the center of their philosophy. Those kinds of results in our thinking come from this that we're talking about. It comes from not understanding the paradoxes of karma, not being able to justify nobility, or for that matter, any virtue, because God becomes lost in a system where you eliminate most of the thoughts of God. It's a non-spiritual universe. And that's a real tough place to be. Very tough. So, where does that leave us for ending up this first segment of the show? Well, to begin with, nobility is the best, the highest virtue that humans can create. But as we strive to move outside of the human kingdom, there are much higher virtues. At the same time, just having nobility in the face of finding paradoxes about our world is a good challenge. And it probably keeps us on our toes so that we don't completely fall victim to the idea that the universe is completely predetermined. Because after all, God created it, and if God can create something, he can destroy it, or it can, you know, just play games with it, whatever it wants to do, without there being any cost, because it is God. But that isn't my understanding of what God is. My understanding tells me that God is the greatest of all great beings. And its forms of overcoming the limitations of nobility, as an example, is to give us an infinite possibility of growth beyond nobility and up to nobility as well. So we can exceed the concept and we can undo some of the paradoxes of karma. Fascinating. And this is what we're going to talk about in the rest of the show. The practical meanings of these things in daily life. Now, you're going to probably say, oh, finally we're going to get to something I can understand. No, this was important to talk about this in terms of theoretical understandings, because this is the foundation of so many false philosophies and wrong ones. Truly is. Okay, so we're going to come back in about 2.5 minutes and start getting a little more practical with the show. Let your brains cool off a little bit. There'll still be more concepts, but we'll intermix it with some straight talk and come up with some interesting practical ways of using some of these big, big concepts. Okay, we'll be back in about 2 minutes and 30 seconds from right now.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hun, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. MacFlower.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
We're back. This is Why Life Is. I'm your host, Niles McFlower, and got your brains cooled off a little bit. That was a pretty heavy-duty first section there, talking a lot about some way-out-there concepts. But I think the rest of the show will bring those concepts to a level where it make more sense. Let's start off with astrology. I know a lot of our listeners are followers of some types of astrology, and many types of astrology, these days at least, defer to a predetermined concept. They believe that is predetermination, or else how could astrology work? You know, that kind of thing. Well, let me explain the fallacies of that, and then what the correction is. The fallacy about astrology being predetermined is that everything is like in some fixed pattern, out in outer space, stars, the planets, etc., constellations. And as long as you can calculate these things, you can pretty much figure out what a person's life is going to be like. And this is the premise that some, not all, astrologers, people who practice it, people who are, let's say, professionals at it, and others who are just dabbling and interested in it from different sides, it may have as a viewpoint. What is wrong with that viewpoint, and if it is wrong, then what's the correct viewpoint? Well, what's wrong with it is this. It kind of conclusionarily determines what supposedly astrology is based upon a superficial observation of what seems to be happening when someone looks at someone else's horoscope. That's really the bottom line. Someone says, oh, well, you'll be able to tell from the person's horoscope by progressing it into today's places of where things are in the skies around us, that this or this is going to happen to them, or that other thing will take place to them. And what astrology really is it has to do with karma. And it has all the paradoxes of karma that I talked about earlier in the show, and many more, because I skipped over a lot of them, left a lot of holes there, because it gets too complicated for most people to follow in such short order. And I don't want to take up several shows just going over that one subject, at least not now. So, this is the point. Think about it this way. Let's say that a person's horoscope is their karma as understood within the context of their soul. Now, let me explain what I'm saying. The soul is able to determine what, in a creative way, it wants its next human being to grow in. And in growing, it's going to also have to face the next human in the areas of growth, the areas that it has failed to grow in the past. If the soul chooses not to grow in certain areas, it actually ignores the karma from the past. It doesn't have to deal with them in many circumstances. But if it wants you to grow, and it's you as a soul that chooses this, by the way, but us in the limited capacity as the human being doesn't understand it, I'll try to be very practical here. Let's say that my soul decided that a good area for me to grow in is to be able to speak with some level of understanding in mediums such as the radio, and to do it in the way that I am presently doing it, without a preconceived or pre-written script, and able to create these things in a very fast and accurate manner, these things being talking that I'm doing. And let's say that in the past, I've used, past being prior lifetimes, I've used this sight ability that I had then, maybe not as well as I have it today, to be disruptive, try to get people, to convince people of wrongful things, and to not be of much help. Of course, I hope I'm not doing that now, and I think most people would think I'm not. But so I'm going to grow more in this area. I'm going to change and improve my abilities of doing it. But at the same time, I'm accelerating my karma for whatever I've done in the past that's a problem. Now, I hope this is starting to make some sense to you, because what that means is that, wait a second, there's nothing predetermined here. Unless you want to say that the creation of me as a being, a human being, was predetermined to some extent by my soul, of which I am a part. So a part of me decided for me that I am going to work on certain issues and grow in certain ways, more in this lifetime than in other ways that I may have, especially in prior lifetimes. And as I do that growth, I'm going to need to face in the areas of that growth where I've been selfish in any past lifetime. And in those areas, I can expect some acceleration of the effects coming from whatever causes I created from those earlier times, making my life a little more difficult in this lifetime. But nonetheless, what does this mean in terms of predetermination? Well, I'm still free to operate, right? Hey, I could, as a human being, I can say, you know, when I was a part of my soul, I said, well, I was going to do all this, but I don't want to do it now. Screw it. Can we all choose something like that as an expression? Sure. Therefore, it is not predetermined what's going to happen, because we're making choices that can go one way or another. Now, people who are into astrology very heavily and believe in determinism believe no matter what you say or do, the outcome will still be the same, because the effects are going to come out of the causes no matter what we do, and therefore everything is predetermined. But that isn't the case, and you can prove it to yourself in a number of ways. Let me explain. Let's say that you've done some very negative things earlier in this life. It's not going to be lifetimes before, because we're not sure how much you're going to remember. But at least in this lifetime, you have pretty good memory, right? And so you say, you know, I've done these things. And they're pretty nasty things. And maybe I deserve to have my thumbs torn out, or maybe some other terrible thing happened to me. I mean, because I've done bad things. Well, what would be proof that there is no predetermination is that once you come to the conclusion that you've done these bad things and you start to change, if you're aware of what I've said, you can expect that karma is going to come and hit you faster. The effects are going to speed up. But at the same time, if you're creating a lot of virtue, most of those effects will have virtually no negative effect on you. And if that's a true statement, if everything I'm saying is true, you can test this out, therefore. On a very practical side, you can just literally write a script out of how you're going to test daily the premise of whether your life is really predetermined or is it based upon freedom and choice. And every day you can live your life and challenge some parts of this premise to determine and come to the truth. And, of course, I know, unless I believe I know, within less than a week, certainly just a couple of days, most people would say, hey, wait a second. There's little or no question about it. That there's no predetermination. The more I choose to create my life, the more I'm free to continue to do so. And the better the outcomes are in terms of the effects of all the negative things I have done in the past, even in this lifetime, I can turn things around. And that's a pretty cruel universe, if you think about it. Now, I know some people say, well, yeah, that's your universe, but my universe, bad things are always happening. I don't think so. I think that for the people who are mostly objective and who can see beyond their own nose, they would be able to quickly determine that the more they co-create, enlighten themselves and everything else around them, the less the negative effects from any negative karma, no matter what they did in their past. And this can only be proven by a person actually testing it out themselves. You can't really prove it by just reading about it. So I don't want you to think I'm suggesting that. It's okay to read about it, but that's not going to solve the questions. It's not going to change the answers. You need to really get to the question, well, is it predetermined or is there freedom? And I think you'll come up with the freedom. All right. So taking another step, if everything I just said has a ring of truth to it, then the next part of this gets into the question of what about all the interactions you have with everybody else? Is it predetermined that you're going to meet a person in a certain time period and maybe fall in love with them and become partners with them in some way? Marriage most likely, but some other way possibly. What is that? What is there about that? Well, souls work together. Hundreds and even thousands of them, depending upon their level of development, work together to create new human beings. And when they do so, they're determined to bring about certain kinds of virtuous interactions as best as they can. And so they try to be born in groups together and try to work as groups together in developing light in the world. So they have common purpose. They have common understandings. And what's wrong with that? Well, actually nothing, except that when people believe that they're meeting people and they're having relationships because of some predetermined factor, they're failing to realize that they were the creators, the forerunning creators of those very relationships which they think are predetermined. Now, a lot of people will say, well, isn't that predetermined at least by the individual themselves? Well, if you want to believe that, that's okay. I mean, if you want to say it that way, that's okay. It's not completely true, though, because it's interdirected between all of the parties. It isn't just you determining as a solipsist everybody else around. It's all of us interacting together with a kind of homogenated, co-created adventure in which you couldn't claim almost anything's predetermined because nobody even has a clue where it's really going to go. It's just too complicated. Even if they could understand it, they couldn't necessarily make the changes in themselves and, more importantly, in others that would give them the results they're looking for. Yeah. That's the truth, isn't it? Now, that's an interesting way to look at it, too, from the standpoint that now we're freeing ourselves up from the yoke, I'll call it the yoke, of predetermination. It's really a lousy way to exist, one that definitely leads you into a very negative viewpoint or a nullifying viewpoint, either one or the other, of God. That's a terrible place to be, in my opinion. And I've had some experiences with that. So it's really, it's something that, when we look at it, the universe is open to us if we're open to it. But when we start closing ourselves off to the universe by making sweeping statements like everything's predetermined and there's no There's no sense in changing anything. True existential type of philosophies, because nothing matters anyway. Well, those kinds of thinking is really, they're denials of our spiritual side, they're denials of God itself. And lots of people have them, but it's because they don't have a grounding in God and whatever their religion would be, because they have been somewhat brainwashed, and even more so, have made choices in their direct past to ignore all the ways they could have found themselves being co-creators, themselves being free to create virtually anything, and therefore not predetermined about what was going to happen. And because they wanted to do the very things they're doing now as a soul, because their consciousness was joined with their soul before they incarnated, that is only proof more so of what I'm suggesting here. Yes. I think you're getting it. Is it coming through? All right, more practical sides to this situation. Then the question becomes, well, what about the personality? Yes, I've talked about the personality. Personality is co-created between our soul and soul range. And certain thought forms are put into a fairly enlightened state where they can last for an entire life. And those thought forms give us a certain context of what our personality is going to be like. It's created by us as our soul and helped with us by our soul or angel in the lifetime before. We may arduously task ourselves to try to get a certain personality to be a part of our future human. But you know something? Once people hit about 28 years of age, on an average, they don't really care much about what their personality is like. They don't care what their values were before then. They give up a lot of this stuff. Why is that? Because they believe and learn that life is not predetermined by their own interactions. And they find what they left for themselves as the path towards a more spiritual life through tackling the growth of themselves in certain areas. So they gave themselves a certain kind of personality to work from. And then there's spiritual genes in each of the three bodies that they're given. And those lead to a whole bunch of, we'll say, narrowing of possibilities, but not even coming close to predetermining anything. So there's like a nudge. There's a push in a direction. We've all done this to ourselves. We do it while we're physically alive here, but we've done it before we even incarnated in this particular life. A lot is going on to move us in a direction that a grander plan, hopefully, will come into existence as and make the world a better place. That's what we're really trying to do. Now, there's a few evil people that may not be doing that, but totally different than what almost everybody else is doing. Okay, so that being the case, wow, now we've got some real openings to realize that, hey, you know what? I've got all kinds of opportunities that I've given myself, both as a soul and in opening myself to trying to live as a soul now. And the more I do that, the more free I am to not be predetermined. Yeah, that's a fact. I hope that makes some sense to you guys, because you see what's going on here is that most people these days are in conflict about these very things that I'm bringing up here. They don't even know that. They couldn't explain it the way I'm saying it. But this is the enigmas that they come across. This is what bothers them about any religion, about even the philosophies that I talk about. It comes to terrible terrible ways, we'll say, of trying to figure out your life when you don't even know whether you can change your life, right? Because if you believe in determinism, you don't believe you can change anything. And that's one of the most depressing and destructive ways to leave yourself. It really has almost a ring of desperation to it. Hopefully you will see that this is not the way it really is, but certainly a miserable way to live nonetheless. Let's talk about, well, I'll tell you what, let me give you another cooling off period here. I did want to mention something to you about Jizik. These days, I know so many people are taking Jizik. I know there's a lot of people, at least around me, that are using it. And why is Tai Chi Jizik so good? Well, it's because there is a definite improvement in the reduction of pain without being drugged and feeling drugged and without turning off the divinic energies that are so necessary for our survival. We have to know we're in pain, or at least find some ways of resolving it, and Jesus helps in both of those issues. And it does so in a way which is just amazingly gentle. You don't feel like you're taking a drug. Yet, within a short time, the pain relief can be equivalent to most drugs without most, if any, of the side effects. That's a pretty good deal. Want to know more? BuyJizik.com. You can get there on the internet, BuyJizik.com. If you want to call, 602-431-5762. Check it out that way and see how that seems to you. For those of you who are interested, I'm doing some books. I'm writing some books. And you can help sponsor them. For real. Yeah. Here's something that you can do to really help this world, if you believe in some of the things that I write about. And if you're interested in working with others in that respect, you can sponsor as a group. Or, hey, you know what? You can sponsor as an individual, too. You want to find out more? Hey, you can go to my site and talk to me, in a sense, at Niles at Why Life Is. Or, if that isn't going to work for you, you can go to the people who are somewhat connected with some of these ventures, and you can get to them through ageswisdom.com. But there's lots of ways to reach us. The important thing here is if you really, really, really want to be involved with some of the stuff that we're doing, but you don't want to, you don't want to put aside a year or two of your life to do it, well, money is compressed time and energy, and you can sponsor some of the things that we're doing. And that could be of great help. So we'd like to hear from you. I've got more books to write. And lots of other things to say. Okay, so we're coming back now to this question of being free to be creative and not to be predetermined in our lives. And the question then comes up, okay, let's say someone wants to be even more free than they have been. Yet they know that they're going to accelerate some karma that may somewhat, in some ways, inhibit or prevent their freedom. Then, in those cases, the best thing they can do is to function with nobility and understand that some of the time, even when they're being noble, it won't always overcome some of the prior karma in the specific area that they're dealing in. And it may seem unfair. It may seem like, oh, God doesn't care about me. Oh, God doesn't want me to succeed. God must be a bad dude. A gal. Of course, God is none of those things. God is here to provide grace, but will not, in most circumstances, intervene in our karma to the point where it upsets the relationship of what we've done before to what ultimately is going to happen. So, in other words, except in the most rarest of miracles, this concept of cause and effect is allowed to work its way out. But that doesn't mean anything's predetermined. It just means that the more you're creating light while you're trying, through nobility, while you're trying to create things that are going to be beyond your karma, not for the sake of getting through the karma or anything, just because you want to create more light in the world, then under those circumstances, some of the time things are just going to go kaput. And it's not predetermined. No. It's just that you've got so much negative energy that some of it's going to come out in ways that you may not care for. Does it mean that it wouldn't have been any worse if you hadn't done anything good? No, it would have been a lot worse, eventually. Because the longer you wait, the worse it gets. Better to deal with it now than to wait. But it's hard. It's hard to face all the things that we've done in many lifetimes. And so many people don't immediately, and then they have a lot of these more negative karmic issues come up, seemingly out of no place. It can really happen that way. Your attitude would be best served to look at these kinds of things as opportunities for growth and of ways to test yourself about your belief in God, your sense of truth in the universe, and being a convinced nature in which no matter what happens, as long as you're trying to do the best you can, the outcome will be generally good. Now, does that mean that if you're really an advanced person, that you don't have to exceed nobility? You do. As a matter of fact, people who go beyond, much beyond the third level of initiation, almost certainly are going to be faced with this issue. They're going to have to be greater than noble. They're going to have to do more good in the world than just trying their best. You could say, well, how in the heck is that going to, you know, where is that going to come from? Well, they've got to be more creative. They need to be accepting when things don't go well with a firm and great understanding of how this will eventually turn itself around. And they don't have to have the proof of it right now to move forward. They just will do what they can and watch how all the other more hostile sides of things have been preventing that from occurring. And then realize that they don't have to become victims, that they can make enough changes so that it will not be as bad, at least as it originally seemed. But whatever did turn out bad, they can accept because they realize they've done at least as good as they can, if not having created more of themselves and more connections with many others besides themselves to get beyond individual nobility and into a form of group, let's say, virtue, group light. You can try this yourself and see if it works. Challenge yourself in the areas that you feel the most futile about. Look to see if, when you really go through the futility and see where you end up, that it seldom is near as devastating and destructive as you originally thought it would be. Now, I can't say for everybody this is going to be true, but 99% of you, I think it could be true. And that is that you're going to have these wondrous experiences. They may counter some of the more negative, some of the more, we'll say, hostile ways that folks have been unable to deal with their situations. Yeah. It's an interesting thought process when you get down to it, isn't it? That we really can overcome these things and not have to live in constant fear of our karma, but rather to see it as a way of growth. The more we include others in it, and as part of our group process and co-creation, not to overcome our karma, but to create more virtue in the world, the easier it goes for us. That's why it's best to do this with a group of other people, because as you move up the spiritual ladder, the karma can get pretty extreme in some circumstances, because you're growing so fast that it's tough to deal with. And you need the support and wisdom and help of everyone else you can get it from. Usually meaning that you've created or part of some co-spiritual group of people who are all trying to create more virtue together. That helps. It helps guard against becoming so lost in the seeming impossibility of changing yourself enough. When a lot of people find that there is no determinism, they get a little fearful. That means that it's truly up to them what the outcome of their life and the lives of so many others is going to really be like. I know that sounds strange. It does, it sounds strange from my perspective, too, because I would think everybody would be darn happy that their life is their own, and they're going to live or create within it as they choose. But for a lot of folks, they prefer the excuse of not taking responsibility. They fear that it is up to them. Oh, they may protest about this or that, usually very selfish and meaningful protests ensue about people saying, oh, well, I don't really like the way things are turning out. It's all predetermined, so there's nothing I can do about it. Of course, that's not true. Yet, for people in that thing, it can be even harder to accept that everything is based upon their responsive co-creations in that particular life, in this life. And they can't get away from it. Now, it says it's not punishment. If something happens that seems punishing, then seeing it as not punishment, just as a result coming from prior creations on your own, in this life or possibly prior lives, then that leaves us with so many other alternatives and gives us the freedom to accept our mistakes, to seek help from others, to improve ourselves, and to do the very best we can that may include going beyond just nobility. Once you start working together as a soul with other souls in group fashion, the process is accelerated in terms of our understanding that we're co-creators with God and not some kind of subjects. One of the problems that most groups have, I can speak somewhat from experience, is that in the beginning can be an entire first lifetime, by the way, of a spiritual group. So many of the people are doubtful, resistant to believing they're co-creators with their creator, and they can't grasp that concept very easily from their own perspective. Because too many bad things happen to people all the time, because some of those bad things are very, very destructive. And it's difficult within that framework for someone to accept that it isn't some kind of nasty, terrible situation. And groups of people, when things go wrong, tend to more fully and fairly quickly deny the God in us and the fact that we are creators of what's happening to us. At the same time, God has grace and will help us in some way. And ultimately, the whole process is an experience to try to ultimately improve the world as we exist in it, while we improve ourselves, while we live out many different lifetimes intimately together, and need to focus on being as virtuous as possible in each one, in whatever ways are needed at the time. This is so important, and yet groups of people tend to not find this as easily as even the individual. Why is that? Well, because each is seeking in their own mind and heart an affirmation to individual than group. So they look at it as, I had this happen to me, and I don't feel, and I don't like, and I don't think. All of those things start going on. And at the same time, there is an immediate, almost, let's say, negative response at and towards others for being the responsible parties. And if you're in a group, and the group hasn't solidified around the soul yet, so it's not acting very soul conscious, then each is pointing a finger at everybody else. And the group becomes as much a part of the predetermined elements of the paradox of karma as the idea of astrology might, or something else. So from a practical side, you need to be very careful not to push all of these things from a rejection of God or of karma or of stars in astrology or maybe of some teacher or some book that you read. It's really about taking responsibility yourself, and it's hard to do, or I should say it's easier not to do, if you're with people who are making as many mistakes as you are, and you say, see, it's all them. They're doing it. Not me. And it's not, probably not God. It's just all the things they're doing. This is a tough problem, isn't it? Common in groups of certain natures. Not all spiritual groups have this happen, but a lot of them do. Some to much more exaggerated levels than others. All right. So how do you get out of that, by the way? If the group that you're in is doing this, what is it? Well, the first thing is that each person must take responsibility for themselves. So the first thing, if you notice this is going on, take responsibility for everything yourself instead of saying, oh, it's everybody else. Just get rid of them, or get rid of this, or stop them from doing this, and that'll solve everything. That's a terrible mistake if you do it. And you may find you're doing it not only rarely, but maybe often. Maybe not even doing it alone, maybe with several others working as a faction together. Yeah, could be. All right. So then where does that lead us in terms of our creations, both in and out of a group, on any significant level to make this world a better place? How do we use this understanding that we're caught into a paradox of karma, and once we break through the paradox, we become the masters of ourselves, and karma no longer becomes a treacherous, terrible thing that's coming to get us? We may even look forward to it. How do we get to that point? Well, each day, take more responsibility for everything that's taking place in every way around you, and especially for anything that isn't going correctly. When you do that, you are nullifying the effects of a predetermined universe. You're asserting the fact that you are the responsible party, not some universe, not God, not the boogeyman, not the group, not some great guru you think of, or someone who writes a book that you read. It's you. And with that attitude in mind, you can really break through this system and become something so much greater than what you end up being in a predetermined universe. What else can be done for folks who are having problems with a lot of negative things? Let's say you've lost your job in the last few months, and you have literally almost no money left, and you've lost most of your possessions, maybe your house, car, whatever. What position does that put you into understanding how the universe is happening around you? Is it predetermined that these things are going to happen, or did it happen because there's so much evil in the world? Did it happen because you didn't do your job good enough in trying to create light? Well, there's some truth to that, but it's still not the answer. What is the answer? Well, the answer is that each of us has failed to be a soul to take responsibility for anything and everything that goes around us, even some things that seem impossible for us on an individual level to control. When you're in that place, when you have these kinds of things that have happened to you, stop being the victim and become a co-creator. Say to yourself, this is an opportunity for me to fight the paradox of karma, to at least be noble and go beyond nobility, and to become some much greater person. This is the lifetime when I can really jump forward because I'm willing to be responsible for everything about my life and look into the ways that I can make my life much better. This particularly comes true when people become ill. Illness for a lot of people is deterministic. Why? Well, I didn't create my own illness. No. What have I got to do with it? If I didn't do it, then someone or something else made me. I don't want to have to be in that position where I am constantly facing an illness or a problem about myself. What do you do? Well, wellness is a state of balance. It's a state of removing negative and forceful energies that we have created inside of ourselves, usually through selfishness. And we can greatly improve it, maybe even cure ourselves of any illness, if we stop doing the negative, oh, gee, I'm sick, it's not my fault, I'm sick, other people made me sick, or maybe God made me sick, but whatever it is, I didn't have anything to do with it. And if that's the model that you want to allow to have happen, you lose control over healing yourself and being able to tremendously impact and improve how great a being you are by functioning as a living human soul and helping some few classmates that might come along to do the same. A worthwhile endeavor. When someone is in a situation where they cannot or will not take responsibility for their own health, the karma from it usually is nasty. Why? Why doesn't the universe just, hey, let me figure it out on my own? Why is it so devastating? to believe that illness comes from outside the self. The devastation mostly comes from the objectification of God and not recognizing that it's a spirit and the nullification of spirit that leads to illness. Yeah, if you cut people's hair and you make it extremely short, it might cause some issues. But if you're looking at it from the standpoint, okay, I'm going to do something here to heal myself and help people to heal themselves, then the way to do that is to produce a lot of, we'll say, positive concepts. Health is balance. Health is not going to excesses. Like I said, if you cut all their hair off, maybe that might cause some problems or something. But you don't want to look at the perspective of your health and the way it is going as an effect coming from something predetermined. It came from some mistakes in your own perception, mistakes in your own selfishness, and not changing those over a long enough period of time for various kinds of negative energies, including infections, but possibly destructions to your senses, which leads to accidents and other problems, to accumulate and produce fairly negative effects. You can also help others in similar positions, and sometimes that's the best cure-all for yourself. Trying to directly help yourself may not be as effective as helping and treat people with something even remotely similar so that you can have some understanding about it from your own experiences and be able to help them to maintain or establish a state of health, a state of new balance to themselves. So the practical side of this is to reject the concept that illness in any way has something to do with someone or something other than yourself. I know that's tough. It certainly doesn't fit the allopathic model, which Western scientists and doctors so much want to buy into. But it does explain why the allopathic model has a tendency not to work, and why, despite all of the time and energy money that is spent on health, so little of it is actually achieved. All right, so where does that take us? Well, for a lot of people, they assume that their whole longevity issue, which I spoke about somewhat last week, is based upon some preconceived notion, which includes their health, by the way. So that you end up with a situation where a person says, well, I'm only going to live for as long as my soul decides and decides, which I really couldn't figure that out. And someday it's just going to pull the switch on me, and it's not going to matter if I'm living good, bad, or in between. It's some kind of capricious nature of souls that they just kill the humans from a certain body. If you believe that, that's illusion. We are going to live, you all are going to live, for as long as it is helpful to everything, including yourself, that you will have interaction with. If you're going to generally have a negative response and negative interactions with people, your health could quickly decline, and your ability to function may become de minimis, all because you have made choices that move you away from life. So you're disabling your soul. You're disabling your soul in connection to this lifetime. And you're making it so that you're going to increase karma and make a negative effect within yourself about it. Some people say to me sometimes, well, it's not my fault I fell down. It's not my fault that I didn't have the right medicine. It's not my fault that the illness I have is something that has a genetic link. Maybe. It's not my fault, it's not my fault, it's not my fault. Well, if you have no fault, and you have no responsibility, you also have no control, the world becomes very frightening quickly. And you lead yourself into determinism. So with each illness and each loss of capacity, diminishment of sense that we encounter as we grow in age, we need to let ourselves breathe and understand that the more we take responsibility for these things that have happened to us, the more they change and we can become more responsible and we can actually be in charge of what seems to be the most esoteric, the most difficult things, life itself. How can we improve it for everything else around us, for all the pets and children and everybody that do not yet have the consciousness to be able to do this for themselves? Well, the best thing we can do is always to respect and give to life first, before we even consider it for ourselves, and to, at the same time, realize that we're helping to develop and co-create with God. This changes the perspective, and it gives us a sense of much wider purpose in who and what we are doing. It's that wisdom and wider purpose that really makes life worth living. Now, what if you've got situations where there seems to be overwhelming pressing health issues, overwhelming issues in health that may affect more than just yourself? That's what gets really touchy and difficult. How do you deal with that sort of thing? Well, by becoming as involved and as co-creative in your treatment and health care as anyone else could possibly be. Does that lead to a self-focus? Somewhat, but if you're doing it because you want to improve this field of human understanding, and you're willing to do so at any cost, and you don't expect to see or get anything in return, that's a pretty darn good place to be. If you can get there, that's a good place to be. You don't have to be listening to the show every week to achieve that either, but it may help in some circumstances. So, once a person starts acting in their life with this tremendous amount of authority to lead their life in the most creative and most productive ways, they take on the nature of being a soul while they're physically alive. Why do we all want to achieve that? Because that's what we came here for. That's the secret. We all came here. Every one of us came here originally to participate in learning how to be a soul in a part of the universe which tends to destroy that understanding and that co-creation with God, and tends to make people become godless, spiritual, non-spiritual, and evil over time in some circumstances. This is the problem with the physical dimension and parts of the astral as well. They're messed up pretty badly. But yet we're here to try to correct that and make a good, a better place out of it. And we're still working on it. It's definitely a work in progress. Thousands of years we've worked on it. It's really remarkable. This is the place. place and the time. This is the place and time to become something much greater than even nobility, to co-create with others at a higher and higher level, and to reach out and to become more than just even human over time. Ultimately, it is our ability to do this in comparison to, say, animals or plants or whatever, that makes us so special. We have individual souls, and they are exercising their ability here through us to try to co-create with God and not be so much an illusion as to make the terrible mistakes we've made in the past. We have these options. They are wonderful options. What if a person is facing imminent death? Isn't that a paradox of tremendous effect, in that the person then experiences a kind of predestination? Because after all, if several quote-unquote doctors say, oh, you got this or that, it's going to kill you within this period of time. Even if you double the time. Let's say it's going to kill you in 6 months and you double it to a year. Knowing our point of death would be predetermination, right? And if somebody tells us that point of death, then they are helping to move us towards the negative side of existence with predetermination. Then what are we supposed to do? Are we supposed to ignore the fact that we may be dying? Are we supposed to just do whatever we feel feels good, because after all, if we're dying, why not? Should we spend whatever money we have, because who cares? Should we do what we darn well please, because we may never have a chance again at it? Answer, none of the above. What is the real answer? The real answer is to double our efforts, triple them, to become more enlightened and virtuous. To become the epitome of what enlightenment means. And then, whatever we believed was true about our health becomes, at best, a mild or moderate approximation of what can be and will be a great life as it continues. Most people don't necessarily have that belief, but it's true, you see. We're only going to get better after we leave this dimension in any respect. But before we leave the dimension, beforehand, this is the opportunity to be able to grow way beyond where they were, to become something so great, so amazing, that it's only almost non-existent to us in terms of, we'll call it our soul, but it's like it's so far beyond where we're functioning. But we can change. And particularly if we work on it together within some context of helping each other, we can become so much greater than who we were. And I'm not talking about those who exaggerated that or their machine broke and gave them weird ideas or whatever. I'm talking about for just everybody. We're all going to physically die and astrally die and lower mentally die within this lifetime. Every one of us. There's no choice. We are all going to do that. It's not predetermination. It's the necessity of the energies within us to have freedom just like we do. It's a sacrifice we're making in a subconscious way that our souls are deeply involved in to give us having to terrorize ourselves if we understand exactly who we're becoming and what we're becoming and just move on. Just give up. You see, it's an interesting thing, isn't it? It's a fascinating thing. When you come to this reality, that ultimately, everybody is going to face death, right? And death is predetermined to some extent, except it's not determined by the act of death, the act of dying. It's determined by the fact that we have to give up our life so that life overall can continue to grow. If we didn't, we would be so selfish, we would be greater in destruction to all other life, including the existence of energy itself and how it grows, that it would have no choice. We would be then cutting it off. We would be then being the anti-God, the God that predetermines for other things. So we have to live within that paradox. Isn't that interesting? Fascinating. So when we come to the end of our life, we're really becoming to the beginning of a new life that is more productive, will be more productive than the life that we had, and can be more free. And isn't neither of those are predetermined. They are actually choices that our soul has made and that we can participate in or we can fight against. We can even delay death in an needless fashion, maybe. Evil does that. You didn't know that? Evil is the only kind of life that fights against all of the tenets of life. And in delaying its own death, it actually is predetermining its own fate. That fate is to suffer immensely beyond any reasonable existence for this perilous and destructive means of choices against God. Against life. This is one of the most fascinating things about all of that I've talked about tonight, is that when we think about it, when we try to understand that there is no such thing as predetermination, except for those that choose to completely reject God, they suffer the consequences of the one thing that God has guaranteed to everything else. Why? Because they've rejected God. They are not punished. They are so separated from God that they aren't protected from the devastating effects of predetermination. Evil suffers greater than any suffering can ever be imagined for its decision to do all that I just said. Wow. So when we think about those in the world around us that may be evil or are evil, one of the things we can be certain about is although they try to control and predetermine everything else around them, ultimately, they create a life that is predetermined at some point in their future. That will be the most suffering and cruelest of all existences. You say, wow, what's that? Well, I've talked about it before. You can read about it if you want. It's in Chapter 8 of Life Seeming, textbook I wrote. It tells you all about it. So evil, it's not hell, by the way. It's not the construct of hell. It's maybe worse for some. But it's a very terrible thing. The thing is about it, and the questionable issues about it are, that the only way you can really suffer in existence of a predetermined universe is by completely rejecting God. You can't any other way that I'm aware of. Do so. Because there's God's grace all around us, continually helping us to overcome such places. Amazing. So for some of you who may be thinking that, gee, my death is predetermined, I've got to die. Well, that was true the day you were born, and even before you were born. The day you were even thought to be created to be born. But death is not the predetermination, because life goes on endlessly. Consciousness is never destroyed. Bodies wear out. You've got to give the bodies a rest. You've got to give them up. Necessary. They eventually just don't work anymore. But that's not the problem. And neither is predetermination of death. I don't know how many people I've talked to who have been faced with their own death and cursed the idea that it's predestined, that they couldn't do anything about it. There's nothing they can do. They feel powerless. First of all, they talk to me about it, usually. But at any rate, it's usually the basis of most of their terror and fears. And interestingly, it's still the same problem. The paradox of karma, and the problems that they face in not recognizing that the universe is not predetermined, except for the most evil of people. It is only their illusion that says it is. It's only the way they think that makes them into this horrible state. Wow. So death is really a kind of an awakening, if you think this whole model through. Death is the way you can see that the universe couldn't be predetermined, particularly if you understand where death leads to and what for, the why. And it gives us much better perspective in terms of the foibles and problems that we have and the forces that are developed while we're physically alive. Because in this existence here, for most of us, we're going to have some, we'll say, forceful outcomes in our existence because we make choices that are wrong over and over. Those forceful outcomes, though, will, if we perceive them correctly, help us to no longer be illusioned and to realize we are the creators of ourselves. We are the creators of our own lives, and we are the creators of all the effects, of all the causes that we and anything else that we have ever had anything to do with have ever created. And that includes world karma. That includes universal karma, the entire universe, whatever level, small fraction thereof we have some responsibility for in some ways. And it includes taking responsibility for things we have no responsibility for, just because we can see that taking responsibility is not a bad thing, but a good thing. It completely frees us to become something much greater, even while we are physically alive. It allows us to live our life in a way that completely overcomes the fear of death, the fear of life, and eventually even the fear of evil. Because many people can overcome fear of death in life, but they still can't get themselves to ever understand or see evil because because they fear it in such great ways. They give it unusual powers and control and think that it can do some things that it can't. It's the illusion that evil wants to put it into us. But that's all gone once we realize, well, those dummies are going to suffer the worst of anything. And they are living into the worst of all illusions. They're living into the ultimate creation of the one thing that nothing else will ever have to deal with, and that is a deterministic life for a very, very long time. Not indefinite, by the way, but a very, very long time. That's a terrible thing. That's what evil puts itself into. So here we have the answers to all of the seemingly difficult and almost impossible questions to deal with. Everything from death to meaning of life to the quagmires of being able to understand and face that there is evil. And that we need to do some things about it if we can. All that comes from this paradox and from these issues of recognizing who we really are, free beings, versus the deterministic universe. Amazing stuff. Well, I hope tonight's show has really gotten everybody to think about what, for me, was a very big problem. It took me several years to actually come to some of the conclusions that I've talked to you about tonight. Especially the one about death. I have to tell you, the death in my earlier years, nothing in recent times, but in my earlier years, death was a big question mark. Not because I didn't have some free understanding of from various experiences about what happens when you die and some question, but it was about why death, what is it, why is it necessary? And also, how does it fit into a free creation model? Now, of course, now I realize how it does. And at that time, I wasn't quite sure. And why do some people have such a hard time facing that? Now I realize it's because they feel as though, and they think as though, they aren't in control of that. Yet we all are, because we all made a decision about it a long time before we were even created. Interestingly, none of the decisions that are the most important are made in a vacuum or are made some later event in time. They're actually made beforehand. We just don't remember that we did it. But eventually we will. And when we do, we'll just smile and say, yeah, I remember that. I remember. Well, I hope tonight has been kind of interesting. And there have been some interesting things to think about. So, next week we'll deal with some more issues dealing with spirituality and metaphysics. And until then, this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is.